So today, we're going to be talking about habits, establishing habits for happiness. Okay? So happiness is what we all want, but happiness seems to evade us. You know, we don't, we want it, but we can't actually find it in a satisfactory way, can we? And instead, problems come. Even though we don't want them, they come. So, what we're trying to do in our Buddhist practice is change this dynamic and learn how to create the causes for happiness and how to leave aside the causes of suffering. So that's what we'll be discussing this evening. So, setting up habits for happiness, okay? A habit is something we do repeatedly, something we do regularly, something we familiarize ourselves with. And so, since our motivation is the most important aspect of what we do, in our Dharma practice, we want to cultivate the habit of cultivating a good motivation. So we want to start that in the morning when we wake up, okay? And start by cultivating a good motivation every morning when we wake up, okay? So you don't even need to get out of bed to do this. I mean, sure, you will get out of bed. You have to get out of bed for the day. But to cultivate your motivation at the beginning, you don't have to. So the first thing you do when you wake up is take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So you can chant a prayer or a verse, or you can simply say, I take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Okay, so that sets straight for us at the very beginning of the day what path we're practicing and who is guiding us on the path. Okay, so we're Buddhists, we're looking to the Buddha Dharma Sangha for spiritual guidance, and we're going to follow their instruction. Now, one of the first things the Buddha says to us is, cultivate a good motivation. Yeah. Abandon ignorance, anger, and hatred. Ignorance, anger, and attachment. And cultivate love and compassion and wisdom. Okay? So after we take refuge, then we think, today, as much as possible, I'm not going to harm anybody. Because isn't that the most important thing you have to do every day, is not harm anybody? Isn't that more important than going grocery shopping and going to work and everything else you're running around doing? Yeah, most important thing every day is not to harm other people, either physically or verbally by what we say that hurts their feelings or deceives them, or mentally by having malicious thoughts towards them, or coveting their possessions, things like that. Okay? So first thing, we make a strong determination today, as much as possible, I'm not going to harm anybody. Okay? And then we make another determination. Today, as much as possible, I'm going to help others. So there's many ways to help others. The Bodhisattvas help others by teaching them the Dharma and leading them on the path to awakening. If we can do that, great. If we can't do that, then we help others to meet the Dharma in one way or another. Maybe by sharing a Dharma book, leaving a Dharma book or lying on the coffee table in your house. Maybe a relative will pick it up. things like this, and also by helping people in practical ways. If they need help doing a particular task, or at work you're working on a project and people need help doing it, then reaching out and helping. Okay? So it sounds very easy. Don't harm and help others. But when it comes to the actual situation, our self-centered thought gets in the way. We're at work, and somebody says, "Oh, I need help on this project. Can you help me?" And our mind thinks, "Why are you asking me? It's your responsibility. You're only asking me because you're too lazy to do it yourself." Right? Do you ever think like that when somebody asks you for help? Or somebody asks you for help and you think, "What have you ever done for me? Why should I help you? If I help you, you're only going to continue taking advantage of me." Okay? So we may have the thought of compassion to benefit others, but then our own mind that is full of disturbing emotions gets in our way and prevents us from being of help. Or we think to help and then our mind says, "Oh, but if I help, I'm interfering and they may not be happy with me doing that." Okay. So that's another thing that we say, meaning I'm too lazy, or I'm afraid that they'll criticize me even though I'm trying to help. So I've seen all these kinds of motivations in myself. Yeah. These kind of thoughts that come up, even though in the morning I say, "Oh, I'm going to benefit others." Okay, so we have to be very much on the guard against this self-centered thought that always puts ourselves first. So how do you deal with that? Okay? So somebody asks you for help, then you have the time, you have the skill, you help them. When you finish, you stop. You leave, you go do something else. What's the problem with that? Why do we add so many stories on that simple action and add our fears and our worries? "Oh, if I help them, they'll take advantage of me. They're too lazy. You know, I shouldn't do it because then, you know, they'll never learn," etc., etc. When it's something easy that we can help with, we help. Now, when it comes to raising children, it's a little bit different. Because with your kids, you need to teach them skills and you need to teach them how to do things. So if they ask you for help, teach them how to do the thing that they need help with. Don't just go do it for them. Because if you do it for them, then they will never learn how to do it themselves. Okay? So, two motivations. Not to help, to benefit as much as possible. And a third motivation is to increase our love and compassion for others day by day, you know, and generate the bodhicitta, the mind aspiring for full awakening for the benefit of others, and make that kind of very precious mind arise in us and familiarize ourselves with it. Okay? So, you do that first thing in the morning. If you can't remember to do it when you first wake up, yeah, put a note on the bathroom mirror or on the refrigerator. or on your bag that you take to work. Yeah? Today, as much as possible, I'm not going to harm. Today, as much as possible, I'm going to be a benefit. Today, I'm going to continue to grow my altruistic intention and great compassion so that I can become a Buddha for the benefit of all beings. And you write that down, put it somewhere where you're going to see it, and then you remind yourself each morning. If you do this, you're really starting the day off in a very good way. Yeah. Because if we don't do this, how we usually wake up is like the alarm goes beep, 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 and go, oh, shut up. And automatically we're irritated and in a bad mood. Then we think, oh, what do I have to do today? I have to go to work. I have to see all these people I don't like. I have to do this work that I don't like. Okay? And you think that before you've gotten out of bed. So you're starting the day off really kind of in a bad mood, aren't you? Yeah. Then you think, oh, but if I get out of bed, then I can eat breakfast. Oh, breakfast makes me happy. Okay, I'll get out of bed and have breakfast. And we generate attachment. Then we go to the refrigerator and we take something and we think, how can I eat the food that I really like and leave the bare minimum for other people in the family? But without looking like I'm being greedy. Okay? So already, again, our mind is greed, isn't it? It's involved in greed. Okay. So if you start your day in the other way, you know, taking refuge, setting your motivation, not to harm, to benefit, to generate bodhicitta. And then, if it's a work day, generate your motivation to go to work. Yeah? So, you know, no matter what kind of job you have, there's going to be clients and customers, people who benefit from the work you do. If you work in a factory, you're making something, people will benefit from that. If you're working in a service job, people will benefit from what you're doing. So make a very conscious intention in the morning. Yeah, I'm going to go to work in order to benefit other people. Because my work is part of society. And in society, we all depend on each other. And we all need each other's skills. Yeah. And so have a happy mind thinking, I have something that I can offer to society. And not only, you know, helping your customers and clients, but also your colleagues. Yeah. When you go to work, you're working with other people. And so think, may I be harmonious at work? May I help to make a very good atmosphere for my colleagues in which we all work? Yeah. So I'm not going to go to work and be grumpy. Yeah. I'm going to go and smile at people and greet them and say hello. And if you really want to benefit your colleagues, you know what you can do? And this is not just for the women, it's for the men too. You clean up around the coffee machine. Okay? Because in an office, that's usually where people make a mess and they don't clean up. So you make it your job to tidy up around the coffee machine, or wherever it is that, you know, people make their beverages. And I tell you, if you do that, your colleagues are going to love you. Yeah? And it doesn't take very long. And it's not like you're being put down in some kind of lowly position by doing that. It's something you're voluntarily choosing to do because it's helpful to other people. Okay? The same way as when you're, you know, if you're driving, how many people suffer from road rage? You know road rage? Yeah? Who suffers from road rage? Only one person. Two? Who else? Only two people are telling the truth.
They are outrageous.
The rest of you are... How many of you suffer from road rage and get mad when you're driving? What are you afraid of admitting? Yeah? We all know you do it. Why don't you say you do it? You're not hiding anything. It's like people, somebody says, do you have a nose? And you sit there. No. No nose. Yeah. Everybody sees it. Why are we lying? Yeah, what are we ashamed of? Huh? So we should learn how to own our faults. Yeah, and be able to admit them. Because, like I said, everybody knows them anyway. I live in a monastery with several of, you know, many other people. We all know each other's faults. Yeah, we all do. In a family, you all know each other's faults. In a workplace, you know each other's fault. Why don't we just say, yeah? Okay, so you try and, you know, be kind to the people that you work with. If you're driving, okay, so right now, I'm only talking to two people. The rest of you can plug your ears. I'm not talking to you. Okay. But for the people who are telling the truth that they suffer from road rage, this gentleman, this person, it's good to think you're driving somewhere and to think, you know, may you go first. Yeah, you're in a traffic jam. Yeah. May you go first. It doesn't mean you let everybody go first, because then all the people in back of you will be unhappy. But certainly if somebody's trying to change lanes, let them change lanes. Somebody, you know, they didn't plan to make the turn, they're suddenly trying to do it, let them do it. And don't swear at them. Because we always think, if somebody cuts us off on the highway, oh, that person's doing it deliberately. They're being aggressive and mean and they're trying to harm me. Really? Do any of you accidentally cut people off? I know you don't. But I know two people in the audience who will be honest and admit it. Okay. So sometimes you cut people off accidentally. If they get mad at you and speed up and then cut you off, yeah, does that do any good? No, so what good does it do when you do that to them? Okay. One time my friend was having a baby and she wanted to give birth at home. So I was there and, you know, with the midwife, and we were trying to help. And then it became apparent that she couldn't have natural childbirth at home. She was going to have to go to the hospital and have an epidural. So we put her in the car, and my friend was driving. Of course he drove a little bit fast, because she's having a baby, and we don't want the baby to get born in the car. So he's going a little bit fast. He may have cut a few people off, but don't you think he had a good reason for doing that? So when people cut you off, you don't automatically impute a bad motivation. There may be somebody in their car having a baby or having a heart attack. Yeah? So don't automatically jump to negative conclusions. Okay. Then, throughout your day, if you're at work, pick something that you do very regularly at work, and make that like a mindfulness spell that will remind you to come back and cultivate your motivation again. Okay? So it might be, you know, every time the phone rings, although I know you people don't use phones anymore. Your whole world is this big. Yeah. You don't talk to live people anymore. Or you send them a verbal message, and they send you a verbal message right back in the next minute. And then you send them another verbal message, and they send you one right back. But you don't make a phone call to talk to each other. Yeah? You text all the time. Try talking to real live human beings sometimes. It's really wonderful. Yeah? It's more fun than texting. To connect with a live human being. Mm-hmm. I read one story of a couple, a man and a woman, that met on a dating site. And so they, they emailed back and forth, they texted back and forth. Sometimes they had Skype things back and forth, because they lived very far away in different parts of the country. And at some point they decided they should meet and actually talk to each other. So they met somewhere, sat down, started to talk to each other, and it felt so weird for them to talk to a human being that they went in different rooms and started emailing and Skyping again. Yeah? And I hear in families, you know, yeah, you don't talk to your kids. Your kid texts you, you know, Mom, I need this. Yeah, and Mom goes about doing it, you know. Then Dad texts the kid, go to bed. Yeah, the kid turns off the texting so it looks like he went to bed. Then he turns it back on again, and he's watching all this stuff on YouTube that you don't know about. Yeah, you need to keep track of what your kids are watching. Okay. So find something that happens during the day that can act as a reminder to you to remember your motivation. So maybe it's turning on the computer. Whenever you turn on the computer, you remember your motivation. I'm not going to harm. I'm going to benefit. I'm going to generate bodhicitta. Okay? So find something. Yeah? Then, when you eat, yeah, when you drink, offer your food. Because we eat and drink all day long. Yeah? And it's a wonderful way to create merit and to remember the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Yeah? By offering the food to them before we eat and before we drink. Yeah. So there's a book on the back table called The Compassionate Kitchen, and it has the food offering prayers in it, and it explains their meaning. And so get something like that. Or in the Chinese tradition, there's five contemplations that you do before you eat. So just, you know, when you're eating, pause for a minute, recite those, contemplate like that. Yeah. If you're eating at a restaurant with your friends, you don't need to go, okay, be quiet everybody, I'm praying. And then, you know. No, you just let everybody talk. In your mind, you do the food offering. Okay? So it's another way to remember your refuge, to remember your motivation. Okay? Then, yeah, if you ride a public transportation to work or public transportation home, yeah, you're sitting there with all sorts of people who probably you don't know, right? So, instead of looking around the room with a judgmental mind, thinking, who's that guy? Why are they wearing their clothes like that? Why does that person have their hair like that? It looks so weird, you know? And you know how we look at people and we form judgments about them, even we don't know them? Oh, that person looks wealthy. Oh, maybe I'll go sit next to them. Yeah. Oh, this person looks dirty. I'll go as far away from them as I can. Okay. We don't know any of these people. Yeah. They may be Buddhas for all we know. But we form all these opinions of them. So what's very useful to do is instead of forming these opinions, stop and look around and think, all these people have been kind to me. In previous lives, they've been my parents. They've taken care of me with loving kindness, just like my parents of this life have. I don't recognize them, and they don't recognize me, but we've all had beginningless rebirths. And so we've actually in the past been very close to each other. If you think like that, then your attitude towards people changes. It's kind of like, let's say you were a little kid and, you know, your parents brought you up for the first 2 or 3 years of your life and they were so kind and you loved them so much. And then something happened and you were separated from them. Maybe there was a war or some kind of family problem or whatever. You were separated from them. Then, okay, 40 years go by. You're an adult now. You're walking down the street and you see a beggar sitting by the side of the road. And you suddenly recognize, oh, that's my mother. And that one's my father. I haven't seen them in 40 years. But something bad happened to them, and they're begging on the street. If that happened to you, wouldn't you go help your parents as soon as you recognize them? Didn't matter that they're beggars, or they haven't washed in a week. Yeah, they're your parents. You finally recognize them and you remember their kindness. So in the same way, if we think other living beings have been our parents in previous lives, then when we see them in this lifetime, We may not recognize them instantly, like you may, you know, not recognize the beggars instantly. But then you train your mind and go, oh, that person's been my parent before. They've been kind to me. We've been very, very close. Yeah. Let me smile at them. Let me have a warm, compassionate heart towards them. Yeah, I'll generate loving kindness towards them. Okay? So this is a very good thing to do when you're riding on public transportation. If you're on a bus, do you have a train? You have a train. No, you don't have the subway here. Okay. So on buses, on the ferry, okay? You know, in traffic jams, you have lots of those, okay? You look around at the people in all the other cars, and you think, you know, they've been my kind parents in the past. And so generate a kind thought, wishing them to be well and happy. Okay? So that's one way to think of others as kind. Another way is when you look around, especially when it's rush hour and you're going to work or you're coming home from work, and so is everybody else, then you think, oh, we're all going to do our jobs. And by us doing our jobs, we are helping society to function. So I don't know what work these people do, but whatever it is, I'm benefiting from it. Because without them doing their job, society as a whole is not going to function. Okay? And then stop when you can and thank people for doing the jobs they're doing. If you see, you know, the people climbing the electric lines, to fix the electric poles, I should say, don't climb the lines. The poles, you know, remember their kindness in fixing broken electric lines so that you have electricity. When the garbage collector comes, put your palms together and thank the garbage collector sincerely. Garbage collectors do incredibly important jobs. Okay? I was in a major city in the world one time when all the garbage collectors were on strike. The garbage was piling up on the street. It was becoming a sanitation hazard because bugs were going in it and things were decaying. And, you know, if they didn't resolve this strike, a lot of people would probably get ill. Yeah. So, wow, I really began to you know, appreciate garbage collectors. Yeah. And I try and thank them whenever I see them. And similarly, people who do the road work. Yeah, you know, whenever they're doing the road work, we feel so inconvenienced. Oh, I want to get where I'm going, and they're doing the road work, and I have to stop and wait. Why can't they do the road work at 2 o'clock in the morning when I'm not driving? Yeah, as if these people also don't want to be asleep at 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, stop and thank them. Yeah, if they weren't working outside in the scorching sun, we wouldn't have roads to drive on. Yeah. Today, I saw something so sweet. One of the people here, who's now 40-something, he was with his primary school English teacher, who's now quite elderly. So, you know, after 30 years, going to see his English teacher and thanking her for teaching him. And then now, because she's elderly, helping her around as she was going from place to place. I was really moved by watching that. Yeah. So when you see elderly people, you know, this is somebody's mother and father. Yeah, these are people who have worked very hard in society during their life and have probably raised, you know, families and treat them well. They deserve it. Okay? So these are all things that you can do to create the habit for happiness. Okay? Then, when you get home from work, okay? Maybe you're tired, yeah? You unlock the door. You go in the house. You plop yourself on the sofa and go, I am so exhausted. And then you shout to your spouse, you know, I'm tired, I'm hungry, bring me this, bring me that. Especially the men do that. They think they're slaves. Yeah. Before you go in your house, stop and recall that you're going to see the people you care about most in the world. Yeah. So, of course, the people you care about most in the world, you want to be kind to them, don't you? Yeah. You don't want to just go in the house, sit down, and start ordering them around. Cook me dinner, bring me this, did you do the shopping? Yeah. And talk to your children. Yeah. Ask your children about their day and what they learned, and ask them about their friends. Yeah. Sometimes parents really sound like army drill sergeants. Get up, brush your teeth. Did you do your homework? No, I'm not going to help you with your homework. Yeah. Do it fast, quick, hurry, get in the car, go catch the bus. Yeah. Hurry up, do you have your lunch? No, I'm not making you lunch, you can make it yourself. You're 18 years old. Yeah. And parents really sound some really like drill sergeants. Yeah, talk to your kids. Ask them questions about their life. Do things with them. Have fun with them. Yeah. They grow up very quickly. And your job as a parent is to give them life skills. And so do that especially when they're small. Because when they're small, they will follow your instructions better. But don't just rely on instructing your kids what to do. Set a good example for them. Yeah. People often ask me, how can I get my kids interested in Buddhism? Yeah, I have little kids. How can I get them interested in Buddhism? Well, you could gather together with other parents and start a Sunday school. But you don't want to do that. You want to drop them off at a temple where somebody else teaches them so you can go out for breakfast. No, try, you know, talking with some other parents, see if you can do something, yeah. But really, kids learn the most from their parents' example. So if you want your kids to learn how to have fortitude, how to be okay with not getting everything they want, then you have to show that in your own life. Yeah. If every time you don't get what you want, you get upset and angry, even if you tell your children not to get upset and angry, they will, because they're going to copy your example. Okay. My mother used to say, do as I say, not as I do. But kids watch what parents do. Yeah. And especially with your speech. Yeah. If you criticize other family members, you're teaching your children to criticize each other. If you're not kind to your parents, you're teaching your children that when they grow up, they can forget about you. Okay? So be very careful of the examples you set. Yeah. If you lie and your kids hear you lie, then they're going to lie too. And you're going to be one of the people that they lie to. Okay? So really try and set a good example. Yeah, so that when you go home, you remember, these are the people I love. I want to make them happy. I want to have a good relationship with them. They aren't my servants. They're my loved ones. I heard a story once. I don't know if it's true or not, but it's a good story, and I kind of hope it's true. So, one woman was having marital problems, and she went to a venerable to talk about her marital problems with the venerable, and said, you know, to the venerable, my husband doesn't like me. He treats me so awful. Yeah, and he makes fun of me and he neglects me and I think he might even be having an affair. And, you know, I want to get even with him for all the harm he's causing me by his lying, his drinking, his philandering. She said to the venerable, tell me how to enact my revenge upon my good-for-nothing husband. So the venerable said, okay, from now on, you be really nice to him. You speak kindly to him. You, whatever he wants to do, you join in. You don't speak bad to him. Encourage him. Point out his good qualities. Be really, really nice so that he falls in love with you again. Then, when he's done that, then you tell him you want a divorce. That's how you enact your revenge. So the woman went home. She followed the advice. So nice to her husband. Very kind. Didn't criticize him. Didn't nag. Praised him. Pointed out his good qualities. You know, if he wanted to go to a movie, she went with him. If he wanted to go do some sports activity, she went with him. And they had a good time together and so on. And then she went back to see the venerable because the venerable had told her, do this for 3 months and then come see me again. So she's very nice to her husband. Came back to see the venerable after 3 months. And the venerable said, well, are you ready to give it to him and divorce him now? And the woman said, actually, he's such a nice guy. I want to stay married to him. So I think there's some important lesson in there. Yeah? Sometimes we take our family members for granted and we treat them really poorly, worse than we would treat a stranger. Yeah. And that's what sets up the causes for a bad relationship. But if you treat your spouse very nicely, you speak to them very nicely, It's going to change all that. You're going to have a good relationship, a happy family. It's a good story, isn't it? Yeah. Do you want to go home and be kind to your spouse? Or are you saying, I want my spouse to listen to this story? And they can be kind to me and encourage me and make up to me so that I follow them, I fall in love with them again. So they do it first. You do it first. Okay? Yeah? It's in our own hands. We're the ones who create our relationships with other people. Yeah? Nobody else is making us be mean and nasty to the people we love. It's us who's doing it. So, you know, we got to stop that habit of taking our frustration out on our loved ones and treat them with the respect and kindness that, you know, we initially felt for them, and so that we can have a happy family. Then, before you go to bed at night, so we started out with the morning and going through your day and coming home, and now, yeah, in the evening before you go to bed, stop and ask yourself, how did the day go? I made it a motivation in the morning. How did I do? Yeah, I said I said today as much as possible, I'm not going to harm anybody. Yeah. Did I do that? Was I able to really abandon harming other people? And when you see that you were able to do that, pat yourself on the back. Yeah. Rejoice. Don't be arrogant, but rejoice in your own virtue. Now sometimes our virtue is a little bit mixed. It's like, well, I really wanted to scream at that guy at work, but I kept my mouth shut, but I'm still angry. So the part of keeping your mouth shut and not screaming at the person, that was an improvement from how you usually would be. So rejoice at that. You didn't scream at them. Then the part of you that's still angry, yeah, then there's a little booklet back there called Working with Anger. Read it. It gives you many tools for how to change the way you think so that you're not angry. Yeah. Very valuable skill to have. Okay? Very valuable. So then, if you do that, then during the day, I mean, then before you go to bed, you feel calm because you've released the anger. And you feel happy because you've created merit. Then when you lie down, think that the Buddha is on your pillow and you're putting your head in the Buddha's lap. And go to sleep peacefully. Then when you wake up in the next morning, yeah, first thing, what do? Take refuge. Then what do? You develop your motivation, which has three parts. The first part, don't harm. Second part, help. Third part, yeah. Generate bodhicitta, yeah? Aspire for full awakening for the benefit of others, okay? So write those down tonight before you go to bed, and then maybe put them in the bathroom mirror, put them on the refrigerator, put them on the table where you keep your things before you go out the door to work, yeah? In case you forget. But try and remember when you first wake up. Makes a big difference. Okay? So this is like a whole day's activity, and you do it repeatedly, and it's creating very strong habits for happiness. Especially the part in the morning about taking refuge and generating a good motivation. If you become very familiar with that, then when you die and you wake up in your next life, maybe you will remember to take refuge and generate your positive motivation when you first are born in your next life. Wouldn't that be nice? Okay. So, I talked a lot. Now you can ask some questions or make comments as you wish. And there's a mic that they'll pass around. Yeah.
Regarding the anger issue, keeping the silence is a matter of suppressing the anger inside us, but still anger is there. So how do we remove it? And when we have anger with our close, intimate people, it seems like it's not taken for granted alone. It's also because of intimate kind of people, so they have nowhere to run, so or they are privileged, so they have this kind of conflict continue. It becomes a bad habit. Mm. How to overcome it?
Okay. So, how to overcome anger, yeah. So, we need a whole other talk on how to overcome anger. Yeah, because that booklet I told you to read was based on a talk I gave in a Chinese temple in the U.S. But basically, there's many, many ways, okay, to overcome anger. There's also the book, Healing Anger, Working with Anger. These can be very helpful. Okay, but what I'll tell you a few things that help me. One is to think of the person who harmed me and realize that that person's unhappy. And it's due to their own unhappiness that they harmed me. Because if they were happy, they wouldn't hurt anybody else. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, "It's so beautiful, I'm really happy, I'm going to go hurt somebody and make them miserable." Yeah? People don't do that when they're happy. They do that either when they're suffering or when they're very confused. So when we see people who are suffering or very confused, those people actually should be the objects of our compassion. Shouldn't they? If we don't have compassion for people who are suffering, who are we going to have compassion for? Okay? We should have compassion for everybody, but, you know, especially people who are suffering. So if we remember that the people who hurt us are suffering, then it helps us to drop the anger. And then we're not suppressing it or repressing it. Because like you said, if we're just stuffing it down, it's still there. It's going to come out in another way in our behavior. But the Buddha taught many ways to remedy our anger so that our reasons for anger our reasons for being angry just dissolve, and so does the anger. Okay? Another technique that I use when I'm angry is especially when people criticize me. Nobody likes getting criticized. So if somebody criticizes me, instead of taking it personally, yeah, because a lot of times people are just saying something, but we go, "Oh, they're talking about me." Or they're, you know, kind of talking softly in the back of the room, and we go, "Oh, they're talking bad about me, I know it." Yeah. So first of all, to stop that mind that is manufacturing false stories We don't know that they're talking bad about us behind our back, just because they're talking softly in the back of their room. We don't know that. Okay. Anyway, even if they are talking badly about us, we don't have to get angry. There's no rule in the universe that says when somebody criticizes you, you must get angry. Okay? There's no rule that says that. We have a choice. And if somebody is criticizing us or hurting us, if we think the reason they're doing that is because I've created the karma to be criticized. Yeah. Then we realize that there's no reason to get mad at the other people because we created the karma for it. If we think, you know, I criticized somebody else in the past, and for that reason, now I'm getting criticized. And what I find amazing is when I think, you know, every day almost, at least in my mind, I criticize somebody. Not even one time a day, many times a day. In my mind, sometimes out my mouth, I criticize somebody. But I don't get criticized every day. So actually, it's not fair because I'm criticizing more than I'm getting criticized. If it were fair, I should get more criticism. Okay. But when I get criticism, it's because of my own self-centered thought that made me talk badly about other people. So why am I getting mad at somebody else for doing what I do? Anyway, if they're pointing out a fault that I have, I need to own it. Not like you people. Yeah. If somebody says, you know, you have road rage and you cut me off, if I did that, I have to say yes. Yeah. Because it's like them saying you have a nose. Am I going to go around like this? No, I don't have a nose. You know, what are you talking about? If somebody pointed out a fault I have to say, you're right. And I'm sorry. Oh my goodness, saying I'm sorry. I can't do that. It's so humiliating. I've got to fight with the person. Even though I know I'm wrong, because I've got to win the fight. I've got to be right. How many of you have to be right when you talk to people? Oh, what a sweet group of people. Just the same two people. Yeah. The rest of you never have to be right. Yeah? How many of you, even when you know you're wrong, continue to push your view because you don't want to lose the argument, even though you know you're wrong? Oh! A few people who are getting honest now. Good. Okay, the rest of you are being like President Trump. Yeah. Have you ever noticed this guy never does anything wrong? It's always somebody else who's doing what he's being accused of doing. Because everything he does is A number one, perfect. Yeah, that's why he's being impeached. Okay? So we should not be like that. If we have a fault, if we made a mistake, we should just say, yes, you're right, I'm sorry. Yeah? It doesn't mean we're less than. I admire people who can say, I'm sorry. The people who are like, I am always right. I am never going to lose this argument. I don't particularly respect those people. And I also don't want to be around them. Okay? So, easier just to say when somebody criticizes you. I have that fault and I'm working on it. And then work on it. Okay?
What if the thoughts that we get become distorted and then we have this kind of catastrophic kind of thinking and then we cannot meet our threshold? We cannot be patient about it.
We cannot miss our what?
The threshold.
That means that we lose our impatience.
Yeah.
The kind of thing, and then the anger still arises.
Yeah.
How to solve that?
Okay, once you've gotten that far, very difficult. So what you have to do is practice the remedies to anger in your daily meditation practice when you're not with the people who are pushing your buttons. So you take out situations that happened in the past, you remember them, and you imagine thinking differently and acting differently according to the teachings that you've learned. And you do this again and again and again, create a new habit in your meditation. Yeah. If you do that, then it's much easier to remember when you're in an actual situation. If you don't practice in your meditation practice, then anger comes up and you're gone. You're gone. Yeah? And the best you can do then is say to somebody, excuse me, I'm angry, I need a time out, I'll come back and talk to you later when I'm calm. But usually people, when they're that angry, they don't even think to say that. Or they're too arrogant to say that. Because they're going to sit there and they're going to get their way. You know, really by that time, you have to practice beforehand. It's like taking your driver's test. If you want to take, you know, if you want to pass your driving test, the first time you drive isn't the time when you take your test. You have to practice driving beforehand and know how to deal with these difficult situations. Then you go take your driving test and it's easy. Okay?
Any more questions for Verba? Please, can just raise your hand and then we'll pass the mic to you.
Okay, so these two questions and then we'll stop.
Thank you for the talk, Venerable. Some people they don't take up meditation because they think that it can cause them to go crazy. What's your viewpoint?
No. No. Meditation. If, first of all, to meditate you have to go and get teachings from a qualified teacher. You don't just sit down and roll your eyeballs back in your head, you know, and think. No, you go to a qualified teacher, you get instructions, then you follow the instructions, you do short meditation sessions to start with, and, you know, and gradually learn more and keep practicing, and you're not going to go crazy.
Hello, good evening, Verimbo. I have a question. After taking the refuge and the five precepts, is it allowed to eat meat and then also abstain from drinking alcohol?
Okay, about the one of eating meat, the precept to abandon killing means you don't kill an animal to eat it. You don't kill the animal yourself. You don't ask somebody else to kill it for you. And you don't eat it if you know somebody has killed it specifically for you. So those are the three conditions not to eat meat. That doesn't mean that eating meat is karma-free. It may not break the killing precept, but I think there may still be some karma involved. Regarding alcohol, the fifth precept is not to take intoxicants. Alcohol is an intoxicant. The precept says, do not take alcohol or any intoxicant, not even one drop. Okay, it's very clear. Okay, if you plan to continue drinking, don't take the fifth precept. Only take four of them. Okay? And then you can rejoice at all the people who took all five by going out to the pub and drinking. I'm joking. Okay, so let's sit quietly for a moment and think about what you heard during the talk so that you can take it home and remember it and practice it in your daily life. Put into practice whatever you heard. So we'll do this and then we'll dedicate afterwards. And let's rejoice at the merit we created this evening by talking and thinking about something virtuous. Let's rejoice at the merit we created as an individual and also the merit that everybody in the group created. And then let's dedicate that merit. You can imagine it as light at your heart and send it out into the universe and think that it touches every living being and brings them peace in their body and mind.
Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May the born have no decline, body